It's the Bengal Financial Literacy Show coming up next on KISU FM Radio with our host, Chris Chatwin, professor with the Idaho State University College of Business.
Welcome to this month's episode of the Bengal Financial Literacy Show. I am your host, Chris Chatwin, coming to you from KISU Studio at Idaho State University. I have a return guest with us today, and I wish I could say it's good to have him here with us, except that we got to talk about bad things. So it is good, but it's bad. Dr. Carl Geisler.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah.
And it seems like, so last time I was here, we talked about inflation, and it was pretty high.
Yeah, it was pretty high, about 9% year over year at the time, I believe. So.
And yeah, we're back to talk about inflation.
We got to talk about inflation again,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
So inflation 2.0?
Yeah.
Is the discussion here? Maybe.
Yeah. We'll see.
Question mark. Inflation 2.0? Question mark.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Dr. G, as we know him around here, well, as his students know him and as I know him, is a professor of economics here at the university, chair of the Department of Economics and Finance.
Yep.
Regional economist extraordinaire. I mean, can I say advisor to the state? I mean, or does that put too much pressure on you?
I mean, I do advise different bodies within the state. So
okay.
You're not wrong.
So when I bring him on, it's because he knows what he is talking about, and I don't. So here we go. All right. So again, last time, I mean, what is it, a year and a half ago? 2 years ago, maybe? It's been a while.
Two and a half? Yeah.
Hey. We were talking about 9% inflation. How did we get here? What's going on? Today, we could almost say inflation is kind of historically where it's been.
Yeah, it's still a little bit elevated from where the Federal Reserve likes to see inflation sit. So their target rate is about 2%. We're just about the 3%, maybe just a hair under 3% right now. So the Federal Reserve is pretty happy. They've done a pretty good job of achieving that that soft landing that they were looking for.
That they were hoping for?
Yeah, so one of the things they were afraid of doing in bringing inflation down is if you bring it down too fast or too hard, then you really increase unemployment. You have some negative impacts there. And so they've been trying to kind of walk this tightrope of bringing price increases down without bringing them down so fast that the rest of the economy goes into a recession.
Yeah, it goes into recession through high unemployment.
Yeah. So I think they've gotten pretty close to achieving that goal, but they're signaling right now that they're more or less on pause in terms of future movement toward bringing rate cuts down or bringing rates down. Those rates, they're going to kind of wait and see what happens with policies from the new administration to see if that's going to maybe put some more inflationary pressures on our economy. And if that's the case, then they're going to want to sit tighter. They might even start raising rates again. So,
we're
kind of in a wait and see pattern.
Wait and see, which is why we say inflation 2.0 question mark.
Yeah.
You know? But maybe before we start talking about that potential increased inflation and the whys, I mean, even with inflation, for lack of a better word, being under control, right? Or being closer to where we want it. Like, that doesn't change things for Americans. Like, everything got really high, really fast.
Yeah. So inflation is the rate at which prices are changing. So when the Fed says that they've brought inflation under control and
brought inflation down.
They're happy with the current level, or, you know, they'd like to see just a little bit of a further reduction in inflation, but they're relatively happy with where it is right now. That's not saying that prices went back to where they were. It's that the changes in prices are no longer going up as much as they were.
Except for eggs.
Yeah, eggs are insane.
But that's a different story, right? An egg shortage, a bird flu or something.
Yeah, so there's a pretty good supply and demand understanding for why eggs are really expensive right now. So if you think about the supply of eggs, there have been some bird flus going around. We've had to have egg farmers essentially killing their flocks because they're trying to prevent the spread of this bird flu. And I don't know, I'm not a medical doctor. I don't know what the downside is of eating eggs with contaminated with bird flu, but it just doesn't sound like a good idea.
Yeah.
So.
And so, yeah, that, I mean, that is, in fact, earlier, just before we got here, we ran into the dean of the College of Business, Shane Hunt, and he said, you know, if a couple of principles that every business student should know, and really everybody should know, supply and demand is one of those.
Yeah.
Decreased supply. We all still want eggs, or most of us want eggs.
It's going to drive up the price.
It's going to drive up the price. So, so all of that is just a sad way to say, even though inflation as a whole is closer to the historical average,
we have a higher base that we're starting from now. And we're honestly, we're not going to go back.
We're not going back. And that would actually be bad, right?
To decrease prices, we'd have to go into deflation. Prices would have to drop. One of the risks you run in a deflationary period, once people realize that things are getting less expensive in the future, people start to put off purchases.
So that's what stalls the economy.
Yeah. So if you know that everything's going to be a little bit cheaper next month, or, you know, a little bit cheaper next year, you're going to wait that much longer to replace your refrigerator or buy a new car. And when you start putting off those purchases, especially those big purchases, then we have less money flowing through the economy. And if we have fewer people buying those things, then the businesses who hire people to sell those things can't afford to hire people to sell those things. So they have to lay them off. If we're not buying as much right now, then the people making those things, well, we don't need as many right now. So we're going to make fewer. So those workers get furloughed or laid off. And we end up kind of in this downward spiral where, okay, well, things are going to be cheaper in the future. So people pull back spending now. That pullback of spending leads to more people being laid off. Well, when you're laid off, you spend even less. So it ends up being this really vicious cycle that just, yeah, it drives prices down. But if you don't have a job, you can't afford anything anyway.
Sure.
So it ends up being really bad. And that's why the Fed targets that like 2% inflation rate, because it can go a little bit above that or a little bit below that. And when it goes below 2%, yeah, it's not going to drop negative. And if it goes up a little bit above 2%, okay, it's not a huge difference. Okay, I could buy, you know, 100 hamburgers last January. This January, I can buy 98 hamburgers. That's not a huge change in the quality of life for someone having that just that little bit of buffer. But we don't want zero. We kind of want a little bit, not too much, not too less. The Goldilocks.
The Goldilocks, level. Yeah. Which we want, so long as we also see inflation in our wages, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If your wages never climb and prices climb,
then your real wage is actually declining. Your ability to purchase is going down.
And that's unfortunately what, like, even as things were recovering after COVID, people were, you know, seeing some wage increase, it wasn't keeping pace with.
Yeah, it hadn't been historically.
Hadn't been, so.
In the last quarter of last year, in 2024, it's looking like wages are starting to grow in line with inflation, if not a little bit more. So
that's at least a positive.
So, yeah, hopefully if you're listening to this out there, you're going to your boss and saying, hey, prices are up. I need at least a cost of living adjustment so that I can maintain the same cost of living, if not, you know, get a real raise on top of that.
At the very least, your raise is just a cost of living adjustment, just keeping pace with inflation.
Yeah.
And if you're doing really good work, hopefully it's more.
Yeah, hopefully it's more than that.
Yeah. Okay, well now, recap on inflation, everything that is inflation, and maybe kind of where we sit now is where we go to the potential, and I say potential because, you know, we kind of know we have ideas. The economists have ideas, but we got to talk tariffs.
Yeah, let's talk tariffs.
Oh, okay.
So before tariffs, let's just preface this with a little bit of economic groundwork. Economists like to compare the additional costs of something with the additional benefits, because it's very rare that something is purely good or purely bad, right? There's always going to be some trade-off that happens. So we use the word marginal when we're talking about these things, as in one more thing added at the margin. So what are the marginal costs versus the marginal benefit? And if there's something that we want more of or something that we want less of, we're always looking at, okay, well, what's the additional benefit and what's the additional cost? What's that marginal benefit versus that marginal cost? And so if we wanted to take like pollution, for example, so everybody wants clean air, everyone wants clean water. The optimal level of pollution is not zero. So there is some cost to pollution. But if we drove pollution down to zero, that would mean that we're producing nothing.
Nothing right? at
and
all.
I don't know about you, but I kind of like to eat food.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some pollution. So we're looking, again, for that Goldilocks level. So we don't want it too high because then the costs are going to outweigh the benefits. But we don't want it too low because the cost of reducing it is, again, going to outweigh the benefits. So we're always looking for
looking
that
for
balance
optimal,
point. Yeah, we're looking for that balance point. On tariffs, the basic idea is that a tariff is a tax on an import. And it's going to increase the cost of everything that's imported that's subject to that tariff. And it also has the potential, since you're raising the substitute goods that are being imported, it has the potential to also increase prices in the domestically produced version of that good as well. So if tariffs, broad tariffs against Canada and Mexico, which right now are on hold through the end of February, if those come to pass, then we should expect an increase in prices.
Anything coming from Mexico?
They're two of our largest trading partners.
Yeah, two of the three largest, right? And yeah. China's the third largest.
And that
those
tariff,
are not on hold.
Yeah, those tariffs are going into effect right now. So, yeah, so we should expect prices to go up. How much? Depends. The devil's going to be in the details.
Yeah, isn't that the unfortunate thing? Is we get 100 economists together and
yeah,
you'd all have a different number.
Yeah. But they'd all point in the same direction.
Yeah, they'd all point that they'd go up.
Yeah. It depends a little bit. Like I said, does it end up being an across-the-board 25% tariff on all goods from Canada and Mexico? If so, that's heading towards some pretty significant price increases. If it ends up being, dialed back from that or just pointed at different goods, then we should expect less inflation as a result. But, we should be prepared if those tariffs do go into effect to experience higher increases in prices from, as we mentioned, from the already relatively high prices that
we've already had
because inflation was, historically
out of control.
High. Yeah. Yeah. Historically high.
So, yeah. And on that note, I mean, how high? We don't know. The general consensus is prices likely go up.
Yeah.
I mean, right now we're definitely, at least for the time being, facing a 10% tariff on all things from China. And I believe depending on when you're listening to this, I think it was originally a one-month hold while they sort things out for Mexico and Canada. And that's 25% across the board.
Yeah. So the cost is going to be higher prices, okay. Right? The benefit side, so the goal of those tariffs, the stated goal has been, as they've been proposed, is to reduce migration and cross-border trafficking of drugs into the United States.
Yeah, so it's...
So there is a benefit there. As an economist, I wonder if this isn't the right tool for the job, right? So I envision someone trying to like hammer a nail with a screwdriver. Like you might be able to get it done.
Yeah, kind of might work.
But it's probably not the best tool for the job. So if you want to reduce migration, let's just focus on that one.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to reduce migration into the United States, you can look at the two sides of migration. So there's a pull side. So people are being pulled to the United States because they see opportunity here. People are also being pushed from the place that they're coming from because there's a lack of opportunity there.
Mm-hmm.
And migration is usually some combination of those two things. Sometimes it's a lot more push. This place is really bad. There's a civil war breaking out. I need to leave. I don't care where I go. Yeah. A lot of push, little pull.
I need safety.
Yeah. Or it could be, purely economic reasons. There's a lot of opportunity in the United States. That's a lot more pull, a lot less push.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to look at migration and you wanted to use a more direct tool, so you could make that pull less. So you could say, hey, we're going to make it harder to get here. When you get here, the conditions are going to be worse. To do that, you make the place where people are going a little bit worse. I don't know that anyone wants to make the U.S. a little bit worse. That seems like a bad idea.
I don't think that's what we want to do at all.
So then, okay, let's look at the push. So why are people leaving the places they're leaving? There's not a lot of economic opportunity. They're having a hard time with instability of crops or water. So helping people to stay where they are is actually going to have a much larger reduction in migration if we can give people a better alternative someplace else. So investing in those things elsewhere actually benefits us by reducing that,
so where
that
we,
pressure.
We could actually invest and help others in their countries.
We help them, and then it...
And that helps us.
It solves that issue.
But those seem like intuitive ideas.
Yeah. So I'm not sure a tariff is the right tool for that job, especially these
across the
borders.
Yeah, because the tariff in and of itself is
it's a very
is
blunt
not,
instrument that's
yeah, it's
not
the blunt,
directed.
It's the tactic to say, hey, yeah. we're going to do this
yeah.
unless you figure something out on your end.
It's, yeah.
That in and of itself doesn't stop the migration or the drug trafficking or, you know.
Yeah. And there's some definite collateral damage that occurs as a result. So even if you're using it as a bargaining tool, there's going to be some real economic loss along the way. So I heard recently that there was a company here in Idaho that was, you know, they've been working on making this new product and kind of perfecting it over the last couple of years. And they just made a huge sale to Canada to sell this product for about $3 million when the tariffs were supposed to hit at the beginning of the month. That was pulled. Yeah. They said, yeah, you know what? We're not going to
buy from you.
We're not going to buy from you. So that $3 million went away. And it's not that it's going to come back once this gets solved. They said, you know, we're going with a different, similar product from Poland, I believe.
Hmm.
So there's real economic cost.
And isn't that kind of the thing we forget? I mean, we look at this like Canada, Mexico, China, our three biggest trade partners, not just in what comes into this country, but we actually send more to them, if I'm not mistaken, than we bring in from them.
So if they retaliate, not in the case of China.
Okay.
We import more from China. I'm not sure how the trade balance is bilaterally between the U.S. and Canada and the U.S. and Mexico, but it's a lot closer to balanced trade than what we have
with China.
One of the issues with enacting a tariff, and we saw this with the last large round of tariffs we did in the 30s, so 1930, Smoot-Hawley Act imposed a tariff on Canada
mm-hmm.
to try and generate revenue. And Canada basically turned away from the U.S. in terms of trade, turned toward Great Britain, the British Commonwealth, Europe. They were relatively unharmed in the mm-hmm. long run as a result. The U.S. paid most of that cost.
So hopefully we're not in that situation again where they say, hey, well, we won't take your goods.
Yeah. So retaliatory tariffs are kind of the other thing that comes up. So you put a tariff on somebody's goods, you say, hey, we're going to charge you more to bring stuff into the U.S. They're likely to turn around and say, okay, well, we're going to put tariffs on things coming out of the U.S. Those are likely to be more fine-tuned. They're probably mm-hmm. not going to be across the board. So Canada, for instance, doesn't grow a lot of its own fruits and vegetables. They need to import those. So they're not likely to tariff those.
Okay.
But they are going to set tariffs on things where they think they're going to maximize the political pain to the United States or the political pain to the administration for putting this on. So products that are produced in states that are very supportive of the president and his policies, Canada's going to try and poke at those states and inflict pain there as surgically as possible so that, you know,
so that there's some pressure yeah. from within to say, hey,
yeah,
maybe we should change this idea.
It'll be a tit for tat kind of game.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, then maybe in its basic form, because we say tariffs, right? And
yeah.
there's talk of creating the external revenue service to go, you know, gather up this tax as if it's going to be a tax benefit.
I mean, Customs and Border Protection already collects tariffs.
Okay.
So I don't know that we need another.
But bottom line is, if we're taxing or enforcing a tariff on uh-huh. a good from another country, well, it's not like if they were going to sell something to us for $100 and, oh, now I got to pay a 25% tax, it's not like they don't raise the price. And that's why we say they're inflationary, because now they've got to raise the price.
Yeah, so that the tariff is a tax. And if we learned anything, or it's an increased cost of doing business,
yeah.
right? One way or another. And when you increase the cost of doing business, if we learned anything from the most recent round of inflation, businesses are really good at passing along increased costs to consumers.
Yeah.
So what we will likely see, businesses may absorb some of those higher costs. They may absorb some of the tariffs. It's likely that consumers will pay a large chunk. Now, that's not to say that tariffs are always bad. There's actually some really good arguments for tariffs in certain situations. So just recently, there's a tariff proposed, likely to go into effect on metals, on steel and aluminum. And if there are trade partners that are importing or exporting to the United States, so the United States is importing these steel and aluminum products at a below market rate. So if a country is subsidizing the production of these metals and then dumping it in the United States, there's a really good argument to be made for a tariff that brings the cost of those imported goods up to the actual cost of production, which then allows domestic firms to compete. In that case, the tariff is actually really good because it's actually making the market more efficient by bringing everything back to the cost they should be minus whatever the other government subsidy.
Allowing U.S. industry to grow, to not shrink away because we're getting undercut in prices. Right.
And one of the dangers of being undercut by those prices, by that essentially predatory pricing, is that U.S. production can't compete, shuts down. And then when we can no longer produce it, the foreign entity that's subsidizing it, they raise the price. Because there's nothing we can do about it.
And it's not like it's an on-off switch where it's like, oh, okay, well, we'll quickly turn this right back on. It takes some time to catch back up. So
yeah. And in terms of like in steel in particular, we're running at about 70% of capacity. So when we see a tariff on imported metals, and U.S. companies import about a quarter of the steel they use, so it's not nothing, but it's far from a majority. And we have capacity that we can bring online.
We have the capacity to produce more, so that could...
Yeah. And we saw, actually, we saw a 25% tariff on metals in the last administration. Mm-hmm. So we have some experience, and prices didn't go up by 25%.
Right.
So steel actually only went up by 2.4%. Aluminum went up by 1.6%.
Which is so less than the historical inflation rate that we were talking about, targeting too, right?
Yeah. So in terms of negative impacts of that more targeted tariff, that might have more benefit than cost. That might actually be a pretty decent policy. The one caveat there is that in addition to that increase from the tariff, so that was in 2018, those tariffs were enacted. We had a huge bump in the cost of metals because of the COVID crisis and that recession. Just supply chains went crazy, and those prices are actually higher now than they were, even though they've come down from their peak, they're higher now than they were post-tariff price in 2018, 2019. So we're starting from a higher base, and there might not be as much room for producers to absorb increased tariff prices. We might see a larger increase in the cost of metals as a result of these tariffs.
Even though it could potentially be good, right? Like U.S. production, U.S. jobs.
Yeah, so it's really a short run, long run kind of trade-off. Mm-hmm. In the short run, we will pay more as a result of the tariffs, right? And maybe it's only a percent or two. Maybe it's a little bit more because we're starting from that higher base. We will pay more for metals. Things that are made with metals, we'll pay more for those things. In the long run, if we can maintain domestic production and we can force our trading partners to play more fairly and price things more competitively, not subsidize things and then dump them onto our market, in the long run, we benefit by maintaining our own ability to produce.
Gotcha.
So there is that silver lining. And that, I mean, when we're starting from already high prices, higher prices are that much more painful. It's a tough one to quantify, but that is a case where a tariff, again, might have more benefit. Than
might be more benefit.
Yeah.
So maybe on that note, we end with this. So Jamie Dimon, CEO of JP Morgan.
Yeah.
He had said, he was at a conference and he said, Trump's tariff policy is positive for national security. So people should get over it. Okay. It might be. We don't know.
Yeah, it might be.
Okay. certain tariffs might benefit U.S. industry, might lead to better national, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
The problem is Jamie Dimon last year made $39 million, and that is, he's going to be fine.
Yeah. The pain he's going to feel from these tariffs is going to be
nothing.
But your average
American
who's already stretched struggling their paycheck.
Because we went through COVID, we saw a massive price increase, stretched paycheck to paycheck, is going to live through this. And it's pretty hard to just swallow, even if things are better for U.S. industry, the economy in the United States, national security, all those things, it's still painful.
It's a very broad benefit with very specific, very acute pain.
And so, for anyone out there, it's like from a personal finance standpoint, at the end of the day, it's everything I always say. It comes down to you still got to be able to budget. You can only control what you can control. You can't control price increases.
Yep.
So you've got to be aware of what's potentially out there, how to budget, how to get around it. And I don't want to say get over it, as Jamie Dimon did. But unfortunately, it may be something we have to live with. And we live in this new reality.
Yeah. Well, hopefully next time... Our conversation is a little more cheery.
Our next conversation when I introduce you, I hope, is we're sorry to have Carl back on. We're happy to have Carl back on because wage increases far outpacing inflation. Americans are better off.
Yeah, so let's do that. Knock on wood for next time.
Knock on wood for that. Well, Carl, thanks for being here with us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Anytime.
And I hope we do it again real soon with great news.
The Bengal Financial Literacy Show, hosted by ISU's Chris Chatwin, can be heard every third Monday at 7:30 p.m. on KISU-FM. Shows are produced at the studios of KISU in Pocatello at Idaho State University. Audio of this and all past episodes of Bengal Financial Literacy can be found at kisu.org or from Spotify and other select podcast services. Music was produced by Joseph Emmanuel under the direction of the ISU Commercial Music Program. Major funding support for KISU local programming comes from the Associated Students of Idaho State University.